Hi, and welcome to MR Explorer, where friends Z Johnson and Christina Perkins get together on a regular basis to learn and explore different topics regarding the market research industry. Welcome to today's episode. We hope you enjoy. There has been so much focus on diversity and inclusion, and we wanted to be sure that we were actually talking about it from a slightly different point of view. So we know a lot about the stuff that's happening socially, right, in our general social, cultural, lived experience. What we haven't talked about as an industry, as a market research industry, is what are we doing that contributes to systemic racism? And what is it that we need to do better, not only within the research that we do, but also within our walls, in the companies that we work? What is it that we need to do? And so to kick that off, actually, I would love for Anaceli, for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in market research, and what you do.
Sure. I'll get us started. So first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on the show and for prioritizing this important conversation and making space for it. Just to kind of give a little bit about who I am and my entry into market research, I'm actually relatively new. I've been at my current company, which is Known, for about a year and a half, and I work as a consultant here. Before that, I worked for over 8 years for lots of different nonprofits, but most recently I was a high school special education teacher. And I made a switch. I decided to get my MBA, and throughout the course of that program, reignited my passion for psychology, quickly discovered that marketing is applied psychology, and kind of found a job in market research doing a lot of what I really love, which is like understanding people. We're trying to understand people.
Yeah, exactly. Try to figure out the enigma that is people, right?
Right, exactly. Just as far as like what I actually do, I'm on the advanced analytics team as a consultant. I do a lot of different kinds of methodologies, quant-based methodologies like DCMs, MaxDiffs, pricing research, value prop research, driver analysis, those sorts of things. And I love my job.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit about your name, Anaceli, and your ethnicity, as we're talking about diversity and inclusion, especially on this episode.
Sure. My name is Anaceli Vasquez Carrillo, is my full name. I consider myself Latina, is how I identify. My dad is from Mexico. My mom is Mexican American, born in Tucson. I have had a lot of friends identify as Tejana, for example. I'm born and raised in Texas. I don't tend to use Chicana. I think a lot of that is because my dad was an immigrant himself, and there was like a derogatory feeling amongst his family that Chicanos tended to look down on them. And so I kind of carry that along. Latina is kind of where I've landed because I feel like it encompasses a larger group than just the Chicana or Mexican American heritage that that is the smaller group that I am a part of.
Awesome. Melissa.
Yes.
Tell us, welcome to the podcast, first of all.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about your experience in market research and your background as well.
So I've been doing market research for 20 years. I've done a variety of different types of work, both on the client and the supply side. But I think I'd say I'd spent like 70% of my my career on the client side at a different variety of suppliers who focus on different things. I've specialized on B2B audiences specifically for the tech space. And that was really just a function of getting introduced to that early on and realizing I really enjoy it. And that I could distinguish myself in a career doing that. But I've tried to as well, you know, get exposure to consumer research and broaden my skills as much as possible. So I do both qual and quant. Moderating is something that I started doing, you know, in the last 5 years and doing more of increasingly. And where I come to research is my initial experience as an immigrant. I was born in Mexico. And moved here to the U.S. when I was 4. We moved to Texas so my dad could get a PhD. So a lot of what Anaceli said resonated with me that, you know, growing up in Texas, we didn't consider ourselves Chicanos because of that the stigma associated with that there in Texas. But, you know, when I moved to Washington State, for a career change and when I got hired by Microsoft, you know, my experience of how I'm seen by others also kind of morphed because it's a very different type of demographics in the area. Mm-hmm. And so I don't consider myself, you know, I don't prefer to use the term Hispanic because I see that as a designation that was created by the census that's purely based on linguistics and doesn't really apply to everybody who's Latino. Not everybody speaks Spanish. And so, you know, I prefer the term Latina, but I feel as I was thinking about this episode, you know, I feel like my interest in research and why I love this career is I've always wanted to understand people's behavior and what makes them think, behave different ways. And that started for me as a child, as I started to experience people treating me differently because I looked a certain way or had a different background or was an immigrant. I always wanted to understand that. And so that, you know, kind of translates nicely into the work that we do every day when we're trying to understand what motivates people to buy certain things. I see this, my career sort of as an extension of that curiosity to understand people that spawned from having experiences with racism.
That is super fascinating.
Yes, agree. I am somewhat new to just exploring and peeling back the layers that are the Latinx community. This is one of the first times, and this is my, you know, I'm trying to learn. So if this is something that you're not comfortable speaking about, please just let me know. But I haven't really heard the Chicano, like the controversy of that term. Can one of you, and maybe Anaceli, you mentioned it first, if you're comfortable explaining that a little bit more to me, just so I can learn more about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chicano or Chicana means different things to different people, but the way that I kind of grew up understanding it was that it's a distinction between people who are born here in the United States and therefore have a slightly different understanding of themselves and their identity in relation to the mainstream population. And so it's more, and in addition to that, there's like, I don't want to say militant, but there's like a taking back of this identity and being proud and prideful of being Mexican American, which are all wonderful things, right? Mm-hmm. So interestingly, in spite of those like really positive connotations that a lot of people love about the Chicano or Chicana label, because my dad, and I'm so glad, Melissa, that you kind of understand where I'm coming from here. Because my dad was a recent immigrant and because he had many experiences of being looked down on or talked down to by other quote unquote Chicanos, people who I self-identified in that way, as a recent immigrant, that was just something that I grew up thinking, I don't want to be that kind of Latino. I don't want to be, I don't want to, my status as a United States citizen, and because I was born here, to ever mean anything about how I treat people, especially those who are recent immigrants. Similar to Melissa, when I moved to the West Coast, I went to Stanford for my undergrad. That was a huge point of confusion, and I would say just a talking point amongst so many of my peers who were, you know, consider themselves Chicano or Chicana, and some of whom didn't understand why I couldn't grasp that. And I think that their assumption was that because I didn't feel pride in my culture, but it was more that I felt protective of my dad and his experience.
Mm.
I completely agree, if you allow me to interject here. I had a similar experience. You know, we were immigrants, and the idea was, you know, my dad gets his PhD and then we go back. And so the way we were treated in that kind of environment, you're kind of a guest, and people are much more curious about, you know, what's it like in your culture. But then the moment we moved out of that small college town to a bigger city, you know, then I started to see people asking, you know, what neighborhood do you live in? You know, what kind of music do you like? Looking for those markers to identify that we're similar.
Yeah.
And when we didn't align, you know, some of the kids who identified themselves as Chicanos had that same aggressive sort of, you know, militant, I think might be the right word. Of, you know, we're claiming our identity because we've gone through something really challenging in this particular space. And I think in Texas, it's very unique to listen to some of the stories of people whose families were there before Texas was even Texas, you know, when it was still Mexico, and the pride that they have in those roots that go deep. And they're, you know, so I don't see anything wrong with them claiming that. But when they start to assume that, you know, just because you look like them and speak the same language and have shared experiences, that you're necessarily going to claim that for yourself. So, you know, and I kind of see that the same, because being a Latina, it does not mean that, you know, everyone's homogenous. It's the same. I see the same thing with people that I know who have like Puerto Rican roots, and they really like to claim being Boricua. And I love that. But I don't see them necessarily, you know, throwing it at me because they know I'm not Boricua, but they might throw it at each other if you're not Boricua enough. And we often do that within our own community instead of being supportive. And that's something that I think we really do need to change and actively work together to overcome those kind of obstacles we create for ourselves.
Is that something that is talked about, like the coming together as a community, or is that not really an open conversation quite yet?
So I'll jump in just because of the stuff that I had done with the Hola team over at Microsoft while I was there. There is starting to be more of a movement that realizes that Latinos are more together than separate. And so I feel like though it's still nascent in its age in terms of two things. One, realizing not all Latinos are created equally, but also realizing that just because we're not all cut from the same cloth or even from the same country with the same cultural backgrounds doesn't mean we can't all also say that we are Latinos. And by saying that you're Latino, that there is a certain level of cultural identity that comes along with that. It's interesting listening to you, Melissa, and to you, Anaceli, because my mother's from El Salvador. And I remember as you're reminding me of hearing about like, don't hang out with the Chicanos, right? And it was like, there was this rift between inside the Latinx culture that I grew up in part because there was so much racism towards Hispanics. There was so much racism towards Latinos. If you had brown skin, you were going to be treated differently. If you had a Spanish accent, you were going to be treated differently. And there was, at least for me growing up, a retrenchment of speak. I remember my mom speaking numerous times, asking if we thought she should go get trained on how to decrease her accent, because people were like, I can't understand you. I just don't know what you're saying. And she would say, do I need to go and have those lessons to erase my accent? And I remember feeling very protective of, no, that's who you are. That's your heritage. Like, that's where you grew up. Why would you get rid of something so inherent to yourself? But for her, it was, you children need to fit in. So we didn't speak Spanish at home. It was a very white type of upbringing that we had, with the Latino piece kind of interspersed every once in a while. But I remember still, when others would find out that I was Latinx, I'll never forget this one time. Someone's like, oh, that means you cook really well. And I'm like, actually, I suck in the kitchen. I cannot do anything in the kitchen. And they're like, oh, your mother didn't teach you well enough. You're not Latina. And I was just like, I was so taken back by that, because there was this assumption that not just being Latinx, but a Latinx woman meant I was a good cook. And that because I wasn't, therefore, I did not qualify as Latinx. It was so bizarre to me.
I've dealt with that too. I mean, you get the assumptions of you should dress a certain way or you should dance a certain way. But I think once people get to know you, they can see past that. But the initial assumption is always really shocking. And yeah, I have friends that have told me they were told, especially like in Eastern Washington, where there's a large population
of, that's where I grew up. Yeah.
Mexican immigrants who, you know, come here for work, where the kids are told you don't want to learn this because it's going to set you back. And I feel really sad when that happens, because it is a reflection of the real experience that their parents had. And then I feel grateful that my parents made it a point to only speak Spanish at home, at least with the first three kids. By the time they got to my youngest sister, they kind of gave up. And so my sister speaks Spanglish all the time. But I'm super grateful that my mom, who is a teacher, like made us do grammar lessons in the summers and things like that, so we could get a good command of Spanish.
Wow.
Wow. That's interesting. Thank you for teaching me. Thank you for allowing me the space to ask. Just thank you. That was great. Okay, so shifting a little bit into the market research industry, we've talked a little bit about what the goal of this series on the podcast is. It's really just to continue to have these discussions about diversity and inclusion. And as part of that effort, I want to spend some time talking about your own personal experiences, if you're comfortable sharing your own personal experiences within the market research industry, specifically about being Latinx in the market research industry. So, Melissa, I want to start with you. What kind of common issues, or maybe what is your personal experience being Latinx in the market research industry when it comes to diversity, or really like how you're treated or anything like that?
That's a tough question, because I don't feel market research, because of the nature of the analytical people that it attracts, and you know, the problem solvers, and I kind of feel people in our industry can be a little bit more open-minded to new perspectives and things like that. So I don't know if it's a reflection of the types of teams I've chosen to join. I don't ever feel like anyone's deliberately excluded me because of, you know, my race or who I am. Where, how it manifests itself is more the assumptions around you should be an expert on this. So, you know, it's not unusual to be the go-to person that checks, you know, the translations, or you have a study and they decide they're going to add Brazil, and they assume that because, you know, you were born in Mexico, you're going to know and understand Latin America, and then they want you to translate, you know, income ranges to be appropriate for that market. And these are things that, you know, if you think about, no one's born, like the kind of work I do, nobody's born knowing B2B, you know, technical audiences. We always do desk research. Whenever a client comes to us with a new objective, we want to find out what do they know, what's out there in the market, and we do our homework. And so I think it becomes kind of like a crutch for some people to go to the Latina on the team and tell me how to design this question, or, you know, if the translators got the translations right. And what they don't know is when those cases come up, because I understand that Latinos are so diverse, I will help them out for sure. But I will also, you know, depending on the nature of the question, I'll call my mother, or I'll call an aunt or someone in my social group that has a connection to, you know, whatever it is that, and give me some insight just to sense check what I'm giving. Cause, you know, I don't feel like the expert, but I get treated sometimes, or have been treated like I should know all these nuances when I actually don't.
So what are the conversations like when do you mention that, you know, anything additional to just like, well, you know, I'm not actually an expert in that. Do you ever bring up like, just because I'm Latina doesn't mean this or that? Or do you just kind of leave it at a, well, I'm not an expert in that, but I'm happy to like work on this for you?
Yeah, I kind of leave it at, you know, I'm not an expert in that, but I'll help you out. I'll help you think through it, and let me tap into other people who know more than I do. Because that's one thing that I can bring in, people within my network that are other Latinos with other experiences who could share that person may not have. You know, these are people that I work with on a regular basis, so I don't take offense at it. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of a pattern that I see. But I do think there's, you know, it's worth while sharing with them, you know, like if it's translating income levels from one country to another, letting them know, hey, there's these sites that you can go look at and reference, you know, to educate yourself a little bit and try to figure it out yourself first before expecting me to do it for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like it. Anaceli, what about you? As someone who's just earlier in her career, at least in market research, but who has a longer career outside, what have you noticed as issues or problems when it comes to diversity and inclusion or and equity within the industry?
Yeah, I thought a lot about this question, you know, in looking at the discussion guide and just thinking about it ahead. And I feel kind of similarly to Melissa. And I thought that it was because I'm so new to the industry. You know, I've only been in my role for a year and a half, and I only have worked in market research specifically for this company. And so I was looking at it and thinking maybe my perspective is biased or rose colored. But I have had a great experience so far in the company that I work for, in terms of feeling like I have agency, feeling like my role as a Latina woman is not only respected, but like sought after. People are interested in my perspective. There has been a little bit of you know Spanish, so you can like take a look at this, but not an expectation that I will, but more that it's like an added benefit of hiring people who are different from the rest of the team, which is that you get outside perspectives who bring in, you know, their family perspectives, who can, I also like Melissa, when, you know, when I have a question about like, what's a better way to word this, I call my dad. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that, I don't feel like a pressure to know those things off the bat. It's more like I'm telling my manager, oh yeah, I talked to my dad and I talked to my tias and like, this is kind of what they had to say. Isn't that really interesting? So in that way, I potentially do have, you know, a bias in that I've only worked at this company. I will say the one thing that has been really interesting to me is in coming from a nonprofit background into a for-profit business, I actually feel like my company currently has a much greater commitment and has taken many more steps towards diversity and inclusion than other places that I've worked, which is surprising to me given that so many of the places that I've worked for, the the stated mission was to help people who come from historically underrepresented backgrounds. And so I think that what that leads me to believe is that people, is that businesses, for-profit businesses, really are able to be more nimble and more responsive to what the market needs. And right now, we know that the market needs nuance and understanding when it comes to historically underrepresented groups. And I think that there's a certain flexibility that's maybe not necessarily there when you are financially strapped in organizations and nonprofits.
Yeah.
If I could add to that, because I think this is really interesting, even though Anaceli and I, you know, both feel like our work and this industry itself doesn't, we haven't had to deal with those kinds of experiences as much. I will say that any problem, any research firm has a problem finding talented researchers to hire, right? Finding the right talent is important. And I don't feel that there is enough being done to get, historically underrepresented communities into a pipeline for market research. I think that's something that companies like Known are doing, you know, taking steps and you know, putting their money, you know, and taking action when they say they're going to. And then there's lots of other companies that say they want to do that. But when it comes, you know, down to the day to day, they don't actually take any action. So I feel like the hiring pipeline and what we can do is professionals in the industry, you know, is to reach out and work with organizations in the community that provide visibility into potential career paths. For instance, one of the things that I did when I was at Holland Partners is I established a relationship with a couple of the schools in the area that have market research programs dedicated to that, because we were having a hard time finding the right talent. And if they're already trained in market research, then it's going to be an easier fit when you onboard them. But I was, you know, personally really looking at, you know, how can I bring in a richer, more diverse set of talent that's going to benefit this office as well as, you know, the clients that we work for, and change the culture sort of organically. And I don't know that, you know, when you're in a commercial setting and professional services, we're always driven by revenue. And if there's not revenue tied to a project, it's really difficult to justify spending time on it. But I feel it's in our best interest to be setting up those relationships and creating that visibility. Because my experience as an immigrant, as I started my career, my parents, my dad was an engineer and he worked at Motorola and he was very much in the engineering mindset. And I thought the only kind of jobs out there were engineering jobs and I didn't want to be an engineer. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And so, you know, she had been a teacher before she had us, but that wasn't directly applicable to market research. So I would come home from work, you know, and go have dinner with my parents and check in with them. And I'd be telling them about stuff I was dealing with at work, and neither of them had the context of what working in market research or, you know, anything outside of engineering to give me any guidance. And I had to realize really early on, I have to go find mentors for myself and people that I admire and I could learn from, because the source of guidance, who had been my parents, you know, for all my childhood, couldn't really help me there. And I'm actually grateful for that experience, because that taught me that I have to go and make those connections. And if I see that there's a need to introduce people to a market research career who may not have people like me around them, you know, I try to go and create that visibility and those relationships, because it benefits the company, but in the long run, it's going to benefit our industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to add to that, I think that one reason why our company in particular has kind of committed to this effort towards diversity inclusion on our team, at least, is because they were seeing that our clients' teams were much more diverse than their own teams. And that in and of itself was potentially an impetus to get with the program. And I think that, like, in my interview process, they made it very clear that you know, this was something that they were working on. When I walked in, you know, to do my interview, it was a room of mostly men, mostly white men. And without me even asking the question, they said, hey, we know we have some growth to do here and we're doing something about it. And we're interested in, you know, what you have to offer in terms of a different perspective. And they've committed to that. And so I do think that there's a lot of forces that contribute to that. One of them being, you know, what the clients are looking for and who the clients are seeing on the other side of the screen or on the other side of the desk. But also, you know, the kinds of research that the client is asking for.
Mm-hmm. And I would add to that too, the changing demographics in the country are going to kind of force this issue, especially from a commercial perspective. And I think all the social justice momentum and the movements that are happening now, you know, are causing people to have conversations. Like I know, like at Holland Partners, even though I'm no longer working there, I'm still very much in touch with my old colleagues there. They've had conversations internally about, you know, what the joy, you know, the situation that happened with George Floyd, what prompted people to feel and then what can they do about that, you know, within the space that they work in. So I do feel like we're at a turning point where there's going to be a lot more focus paid on people of color. And then with the changing demographics, I think it's inevitable that from a commercial perspective, companies have to get with the program and learn to understand this, this part of the market. And one other thing that I think is interesting is that, you know, market research is a huge, powerful tool for driving action. And I've had the opportunity to work with clients on diversity and inclusion projects to help them improve like the culture at work. And we can talk about that if you want in more detail later. But I also feel like as research companies, research suppliers, we don't use that tool on ourselves. So, you know, it'd be really awesome to see, you know, if you want to really invest in your culture, set up some IDIs, you know, or have group discussions internally with a neutral moderator, just like you would any sensitive topic with the market. And then use that to inform what do you need to do as a supplier to make the culture at your company more inclusive. And we don't do that enough.
That is so interesting. I have never thought of the idea of using our own market research techniques on ourselves. I think we are so used to responding to customer requests and our stakeholder requests. And we don't think about, you know, it's almost like one of those situations where someone's being very self-critical and then you ask them, well, what would you tell your friend? And, you know, it kind of breaks through that they would be kinder to their friend. I wonder if in a similar vein, we're like, well, market research answers so many questions except our own. And we don't realize that the kind of the silliness behind that idea, right? Of if we were confronted with another organization who was trying to figure out how to do diversity and inclusion better, we would be telling them, here is your research outline. Here are the questions you should be asking. Here is the analysis guide that you're going to use afterwards. But I have not yet heard of us doing that for ourselves as an industry at all. It's just, it's an interesting little takeaway there.
It is. And I haven't seen it done very often. I got lucky enough when I was at Microsoft, I got recruited to work in one of the business units, server and tools, as a business manager. And one of the reasons they recruited me for that role to support one of the corporate vice presidents was because he was a stakeholder on a big tracking study that I did that was very technical. And he saw, okay, she gets research. She understands numbers. She could be an asset to my team. And so when I joined, one of the problems that they had was female retention. So this is a large organization with 1,300 people, a lot of them in field organizations in other countries. And it was a very technical role. Most of the roles were very technical. So already to begin with, you know, STEM has challenges attracting and retaining women. And this organization in particular had that problem. And so I was given the unique opportunity because my, you know, the guy that recruited me into this role really trusted my research skills to kind of have free rein on how do we tackle this problem. And so I constructed a research program, you know, that included a little survey and then IDIs with individuals where we collected all that information to really find out, you know, what are these women missing in this organization to keep them around? Why aren't they sticking around? And it was amazing to see the leadership team in that organization, which was predominantly men, take that information and structure an offsite where they discussed and went through, you know, and actually got down to like brass tacks, like, you know, citing out people. I remember when you did this in a meeting and now we're hearing that this was offensive or off-putting to one of our employees. Let's talk about why you do that. They actually got into that. And so nothing changed overnight. I mean, we, from that created mentoring programs, and paired up women with specific senior leaders and structured a meaningful program, not one of those just you meet with somebody 30 Take minutes every programs. Couple of weeks. Exactly. But really showing, you know, that they're invested in developing them and their contribution to the organization. And that was back in 2006. And I'm happy to say that many years later, many reorgs later, the person who runs that organization is a female now. So I think, you know, that's just like one example that when you use the tools that we're good at on yourself, that you can find a pathway to take real concrete actions that make a meaningful difference. And that result in that organization now being led by a woman. And we should be doing more of that. And that's the struggle I have is not enough organizations are willing to do that. Not enough research suppliers will do that. And then I feel like as consultants to clients, we're not bold enough in asking them, what are you doing for diversity inclusion? Do you have a plan? Are there any areas that you need assistance with? Here's how we can help you. You know, it's sort of an afterthought. I mean, how many times do you do a survey that has the ethnicity question in the profiler and then nobody ever does anything with that question?
Right. Right.
So we have to be much more intentional is what I'm getting at.
Unless it's to find out why the results don't look right. And then we start to look at ethnicity to try to see if there was something up with the quotas. But yeah, right. You're right. We ask it, but we don't actually do anything with it.
Well, and then you get to something really interesting there. You can look at the data, but if you're missing that context, the social context and the nuances in the Latino market, you may not know what you're looking at or not know how to explain or put it into a story that is meaningful to people.
Yeah. Let's continue on that just a little bit. What are some of the misconceptions or things that as market researchers, when we are conducting our research, we're either missing, we're totally getting wrong, or we're not even, we're misinterpreting somehow, especially when it comes to diversity and inclusion and the Latino community in particular?
I can start here. I think one of the things, especially in regard to the Latino community, is the risk for market research to become obsolete. We have to move away from this idea that any historically underrepresented group is going to act in a homogenous way. And very similar to how we do research with white mainstream populations, we're looking for those differences, those subgroups that kind of naturally exist. And we should be doing that same thing with any historically underrepresented group instead of trying to find the differences between, you know, our self-identified Hispanic group and the mainstream. What are the differences within the self-identified Hispanic group and the nuances and the context that kind of feed into those differences, and what's the story behind those differences? So I really think that we risk becoming obsolete as an industry if we don't start moving away from comparing mainstream and other groups into comparing within groups and understanding that's kind of where the real gems of information lie.
I think that's really interesting and something that we saw really recently in election polling, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we saw it in polling, and not only do we see it in polling, but we see it now that a lot of the data is in, regardless of where they lean. So many campaign advisors are coming out and saying campaigns only have one message for the Latinx community. That's all they have. They have one message that they use in every place in the United States. And you could sub campaign for any company, you know, any marketing message. You could say that there is one message that was created. There's one image that was created. There's one piece of language that was created to serve an entire community. And I think that it was just slapped across the face of so many marketing executives and hopefully our researchers across the country that just like overemphasizes we're not all the same regardless. Just like you have a different message for mainstream Pacific Northwest and mainstream South, like Southern America. Like there is a different message that you would create for those two different populations. Why wouldn't you treat every other ethnic group the same?
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, Melissa and Ana Celia. One of the things that I've been hearing is as an approach to helping address the issues in the research that we do has been, oh, we need to quota better. Right. We have age and gender quotas, and even those aren't great. We're looking at ways that we can make sure that those are more inclusive. But in addition, it's like, now let's add another layer of quotas in, and let's make sure that we have a quota for the underrepresented populations. What are your thoughts on that as an approach to correcting or mitigating for the exclusion that market research has traditionally had for these underrepresented communities?
Well, I definitely think that adding sample boosts, for instance, you know, can help get at the things that Ana Celia was talking about, the differences within the groups. But that's not the only piece of it, because a lot of it also goes into the interpretation. Yeah. And one of the things to build on that example you brought up with the election, one of the things that I found really frustrating is listening to the media talk about the narrative around the Latino vote and, you know, mm-hmm. what happened with these counties in South Texas and then Florida that voted a particular way and how they spun that. And what was missing in most of the coverage is that, you know, economically, at least in South Texas, where I'm more familiar with that area and people who live there, the economic factor is really, really important there. And they're also traditionally more conservative. So, you know, a lot of them have benefited from jobs that were created along the border because of Department of Homeland Security and ICE. And so mm-hmm. that they were really voting with their wallet more than mm-hmm. they were based on like some sort of identity. And that wasn't covered. I think it was only one online news program that I saw cover that accurately. Every other media source is talking about it in these general, you know, oh, Latinos are on fire. We got to, you know, figure out what's going on. And so it's not just making sure you're able to capture the read, but then having the wherewithal to get the context that you need to correctly interpret it.
That's fascinating. When it comes to the election analysis that was done, there was one and only one article that I saw that was in a similar vein to what you were talking about, Melissa, but it was talking actually about the nuance in the Republican Party in particular in what they were doing to campaign in Southern Florida. And it was interesting to read about because it was actually nuanced towards Cubans who had left Cuba during the Castro era, the Fidel Castro, and how The message there was you don't want to live under another socialist. Mm-hmm. And building on their fears that they had. But it was only one thing that went at all deeper than just that surface level Latinos voted a particular way to go. But I'm like, yeah, but what about all the other races that are there? What about all the other varieties of Latino that exist, right? Like that worked for one particular subgroup, but there are many other subgroups. And how do you talk about those? And how do you do that analysis? And that's one of those things that even when you do add the oversampling or quotas that, you know, you're not sure, like, if you just leave it at Latino, you can't get that richness of the subgroup nuances that could come from digging just a little bit deeper into that.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that has to do also with, like, generationally, where are you in your experience as a Latino? Are you a recent immigrant? Has it been two or three generations or longer? Because it really does change how you feel. As we were talking about, you know, the Cubans in Florida had a very specific experience. And so the messaging can be very targeted to them. Yeah. But then there's, you know, a very different experience for the people who identify as Chicanos in Texas.
Yeah.
Who were there before the U.S. was a country, that also could be messaged differently. So, how do we do this without blowing up the profiler of a questionnaire so that it's 50 questions? That's the tricky part.
Right.
Yeah. I think the other catch here is that, you know, getting sample on those, you know, historically underrepresented groups is just more expensive. And so there has to be kind of a will on the behalf of the client or a willingness to take on this additional cost of getting to these smaller subgroup populations that we're interested in learning about. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's also a challenge, is just panel diversity in and of itself. Like, I've worked on a project recently where we were looking for people who either spoke all Spanish, only Spanish, mostly Spanish, or some Spanish in their homes. Mm-hmm. And it was slow going and difficult to recruit these people. And with, you know, over 60 million Hispanics in the United States, it just seemed like it should be a little bit easier. Like, why don't we have access to these groups of people? And what is it about our panels that make these groups less accessible and therefore expensive?
Yeah.
Do you think on that note that panels are the best place to be reaching some of these different sub-communities in the Latino population in the United States?
I think that's a great question. I think that possibly not, right? But that's kind of one of the ways in which market research has historically worked and that we rely on. And so it's potentially one of the ways in which we need to get with the times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if nothing else, I mean, they can do recruitment efforts or try to ramp up their sample. I mean, I think there's going to be more research interest in doing diversity and inclusion research. So if I were on the panel provider side, I would be looking to grow and differentiate myself by having a panel that's better represented.
Yeah. Like, get ahead of the game, right?
Exactly.
Melissa, I would love to get your opinion on, because you're a B2B specialist, and right now I am also focusing all of my research, on B2B audiences. I would love to hear your opinion on diversity within B2B research programs. Like, I know it's just not something that is typically quoted on. Do you think that is good, bad? What do we do? I'm going to leave it at that. What is your opinion on the diversity within B2B like research programs?
Well, it's kind of an afterthought. If ever I've had an opportunity to do anything related to diversity on a regular project, it sort of gets added on after the fact. For instance, I did a project a long time ago also with Microsoft about, you know, different types of communications people use. And we were really surprised to see, you know, Skype has a lot of equity with the Latino community. And so I started digging into, well, why would Skype in particular have so much equity? And it was because of the kinds of options that it offered to communicate with people who are in other, you know, countries. So it was much more popular than some of the other tools that we expected, you know, Latinos to gravitate towards. But it sort of just comes out of, you know, that artifact of you find something interesting in the data and then you go dig into it. But I feel like with everything that's going on in the industry, and I've seen more companies make an effort to do diversity and inclusion work themselves to figure out what to do about their own workforce, it's only a matter of time before it gets extended out and it becomes integrated as part of the core objectives of any commercial client who wants to better service the U.S. population, which is changing dramatically. So I feel, you know, we have a lot of room to grow, but I think we can play a role, you know, in asking our clients the question of what are you doing here? How can we help? Let's build that together.
Yes, Melissa, it definitely, I mean, it's something to think about, and it's something just to continue, I think, to get to. But yeah, I appreciate your thoughts on it. I think you're right. I think it should continue to be an ongoing discussion, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that this conversation has just been really fantastic. We're going to work on wrapping it up from here. This can take anywhere from 3 minutes to 30, depending on where we go with this conversation. Clearly, you can tell.
Well, I have something else I want to add that might
yes.
build out to something else. This is something I've been personally advocating for, and, you know, different employers of mine are interested in it. But I feel like as market researchers, if we want to make a difference in the society and the world that we live in, and we want to contribute, you know, again, market research is a really powerful tool to drive action. And one of the things that I've been a proponent of and trying to set up is pro bono research projects that specifically work with nonprofits that target underrepresented communities and you know, work with them on a free basis to help them understand what's going on. And this came out of a former client of mine a long time ago was on the executive board of a nonprofit in the Renton area close to Seattle. And they weren't getting the participation and the number of people they were expecting to sign up. And they had a great program focused at the Black community for after school enrichment activities and those types of things. But the parents were just not signing up kids. And so he reached out because of work I had done with him on, you know, a brand tracker and remembered, you know, oh, she knows research, maybe she can tackle this problem. Mm-hmm. And then I took it back to Holland Partners and said, hey, would you guys be interested in doing this? And I positioned it as an opportunity to train people on a very engaging project that makes them feel like they're giving something back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the management team really liked that. Now, unfortunately, we weren't able to carry it out because, you know, bandwidth being what it was, again, that revenue and commercial pressure to make the numbers always gets in the way. And so, you know, I'm going to continue to advocate with every single company I work with, you know, how can we do this? Because I feel like that will help us feel like we're taking more action and we're giving the people that are actually making a difference in these people's lives and connecting them to career paths and new opportunities and housing. We're giving them insights that will help them do that better. And in the long run, we can all help kind of solve the collective issues that we're dealing with as a society. But that's something that I know Known is also interested and has done pro bono projects. And it's one of the reasons why I'm interested in working with them. Mm-hmm. I feel like we have this really powerful tool. Let's use it to change the world.
That's such an interesting concept. And I almost feel like because of the commercial pressures that are put on research providers or suppliers, it's almost like you could position it to high profile clients almost as like a contribute to our pro bono fund, and they would even be able to maybe even participate, or they would get the report, annual report, to see what kind of work you did. Like, that might be a way to even like to have a fund that you would then be able to access.
I wonder too, if there could be partnerships with education organizations, because I know when I was doing my MBA through Washington State University, the marketing class that I took, actually part of it was doing a market research project on behalf of the community. And one of the projects that was done was actually on behalf of, was a neurodiversity project. Actually, it was, investigating options for students with autism. How do you support the parents? How do you support the students? And I bet there would be, you know, because education institutions are always looking for ways that they can get their students hands-on experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be really cool to have research organizations partner with education institutions to carry out that research. You're training a next generation, you're instilling in them not only the tool of market research, but also the importance of diversity and inclusion, while also contributing back to the community. I mean, that just is a win all around for everyone that would be involved.
I think that's a great idea.
Agree 100%.
So I guess, Anaceli, I want to start with you. If you, as you continue your career in market research, what do you think, like, what is your dream for the industry? How should we continue moving, or what should we keep in mind as the industry just continues to grow and learn?
I think something, this might be a little bit specific, but something that I keep coming back to in thinking about my kind of newfound career in market research is the fact that the way that technology is developing, the speed at which it develops, and the potential to be both helpful and detrimental to our society is really top of mind for me. And market research is the foundation of AI, for example, technology, right? They use research in order to build things like facial recognition software. And if we are not absolutely perfect and critical and exceptional in our execution of market research, then the data that artificial intelligence is based on is foundationally unsound. And that to me is a really scary idea. But on the other hand, if we start thinking about these questions about how do we build databases that are representative, how do we build databases that understand nuances between subgroups and understand historically underrepresented groups, then how can those efforts actually enhance the natural trajectory of the development in technology and improve those features so that we are helping communities and not hurting communities? So I think a lot about the power of market research and the power of strong foundational data in the future of our society.
Mm-hmm. I think those are great points. And it's so smart. And, you know, the thing that can help that grow is, again, to further diverse recruiting efforts so that you have folks from a diverse background. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it takes really stakeholders on all sides being mindful of where it is that we have growth opportunities and of you know, executing on that. Like Melissa has touched on this a lot, but it can't just be that we have, you know, that we push sample to meet certain quota requirements. We have to have the people doing the analysis on the other side be representative and understand what the story behind the data is telling us in a way that it feels meaningful to those groups who have been historically underrepresented.
Yeah.
I love that. Melissa, what about you? What is your as someone that has been in the industry for a minute or two, what's your ideal future of the market research industry? What does that look like?
I'd really like to really, you know, walk the walk we say we're going to do, instead of just platitudes. But I also feel like as a society, as a whole, everything that's happened in the last, you know, 9 months, I think makes people kind of reflect a little bit more. And so I'm hopeful that there will be a growth in initiatives that focus on diversity inclusion, not just on the hiring front, but also how we think about the questionnaire design, analysis, you know, and then the conversations that we have with our clients to help them get in front of this demographic change that's going to impact, you know, how they market and get smarter about that. So, you know, because in 20 years, I've heard everybody, you know, sort of speak to doing something about it. But it's only really in the last 5 years that I've seen more of momentum moving in that direction across all those different players, more so on the looking internally and figuring out what to do with our workforce. But you know, we need to just keep building on that and maintain the consciousness that we're creating about these issues and what other Americans experience, keep talking about that and don't let it just be something that, oh, we checked off our list, we did it. We have to, you know, follow it up with action.
Yeah. And just to add to that, Melissa, I think the importance of that, of staying nimble and of staying, keeping a growth mindset, is absolutely critical, because just once you feel like you've learned what it is to learn about a group, that group changes, right? And so I think that it's a consistent, constant growth opportunity, not a challenge. So thinking about it less we as an industry can think about it less like a challenge and more like an opportunity to stay relevant.
Absolutely. You remember a few years ago, everybody was like, let's figure out what millennials think. Everybody did something to, you know, add some special section on questions for millennials. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that happen with the Latino community.
Mm. Yeah, that would be incredible, wouldn't it? I'm hopeful that we are actually hearing more conversations, more sustained conversations, I should say, that are starting to lead to actual actions. I heard someone today talking about being tired of the memes and the platitudes and the tweets and looking for actual actions that we're going to follow through. Like, stop tweeting about it. Show me by your actions what you're doing about it. So I love that from both of you, talking more about that focus on action and what we can do and not just say that we're going to do. I think that's really cool.
And I also think like taking those actions in reference to something that will actually help the community. Like, don't just say you're going to do something, and then when you say it, you have all the responses from members of that community being like, well, how's that supposed to actually help us? Like, that actually, it might make you feel good, but it doesn't actually mean anything, right?
Yeah.
Then how do you make sure that, and one of those things is, you know, we're going to make a donation to fill in the organization here. Great.
Yeah.
That's a nice one-time thing that you did. How is that supposed to help us?
Yeah. What are you doing to actually change?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anaceli and Melissa, it has been just a delight having you on our podcast. Thank you so much for your perspectives, for your time, for your courage in sharing what you shared and being so candid about your thoughts on diversity and inclusion and on your experiences being Latinas in market research. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Keep having these conversations. And by the way, I love your podcast. If something like this had been around when I was starting my career, it would have been super helpful. So I think you're doing a service.
Oh, thank you.
That's what I love to hear. I love that.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for listening to today's episode of MR Explorer. You can find us online at MRXPLORER, that's MRExplorer.com, or you can find us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Links will be in the show notes. Please like, subscribe, and we look forward to exploring more topics about market research with you soon.